Good morning, everybody. I'm Annie Burgett, and I'm a very blessed and grateful Al-Anon. Hello. There is so much love in this room. It's just incredible all of, with everybody. I can just feel it. They said, first thing you have to do, you have to qualify to be in this program. And I've married three alcoholics. I have two children that are, and my daddy was one. So I think I probably belong in Al-Anon. I heard a song coming up here yesterday that meant so much to me. And a lot of times in my life, I've wondered what my purpose was and where I was going. And the name of the song was, God Has a Purpose for Broken People. So I know that my purpose is to share my experience, strength, and hope with you, to know that it does get better and it can get better. I'm a little bit shaky and nervous this morning, so y'all hang with me, please. I was born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky, and I've met some real people here, from neat people from Kentucky here. The first 6 weeks of my life, my mother was 14 when she had me, and she took me home and realized that she couldn't keep me. So she took me to an orphanage in Louisville called Catholic Charities. And I stayed there until I was 6 months old. And my mom and dad adopted me. And mom said that I stayed up every night all night long because she thought that the nuns had kept me up playing with me so I wouldn't sleep. And she said she thought about taking me back to the nuns several times. Mom and dad was told they couldn't have any children. They were married many years, so they applied for adoption, and they got me. And 3 years later, my sister was born. Her name is Betty, and she lives in Baltimore, Maryland today and has two little girls. They're not little. I keep thinking my kids are little, and they're not. I went to all Catholic schools all my life, and I was raised in a home where my dad was an alcoholic. My daddy wasn't a violent alcoholic. He was one of those that he went out and drank. He drank his beer. He'd go from work to the beer joint, and he would come home sometime that night. And I can remember as a little girl laying in my bed praying that my daddy wouldn't drink, and that he would come home at nights with us, and that he would go to functions with mom and Betty and myself, and that we could be one of those normal families, because that's what I always wanted, was one of those normal families like everybody else. Hold on, I can get a drink. I'm shaking. Okay. I'm hiding my drink. Y'all see that? I'm hiding my drinks. I got a whole pitcher. Does anybody want any? And I can remember going to the Catholic schools, and I always felt the absence of a father because daddy wasn't capable of being there with us. As a little girl, on Saturdays, we get to be with Dad some. Mom had had enough of us through the week, so Daddy would take us, and he would always take us to the favorite beer joint. So my sister and I would spend some time on Saturdays in the beer joint, and we would have pretzels and 7-Up. And that was our big day with our dad. And Dad would get us home at some time of the day later on. And I went through life quite a bit with the absence of my father, and I always loved my daddy. I was his favorite, and he always got on me the most because he wanted me to do the best. And Dad was a neat person. He was quiet. My daddy was quiet. You never knew how he felt. You never knew what he thought. So all of my life, I can remember trying to be good. I was the good kid, trying to do well in school. Trying to do well in the neighborhood, trying to keep my room clean, trying to take care of things, because I wanted my daddy's attention. I wanted to know that he loved me. And I worked very hard at that all of my life. And it seemed like that I came up empty quite often. I'd go to daddy, because my dad was very, very intelligent, and ask him to help me with my math, because math was my favorite subject all my life. And he would get real angry at me because I couldn't learn fast enough for him. And as I got older, Daddy played golf. So I thought, all right, this is it. I'm going to learn to play golf. So I would go and pull Daddy's golf bag around. And Dad and I got to know each other a little more then, because I would go golfing with him. And my mom was a neat person. Today I know that my mom, and for some of y'all, I hope that you understand this, my mom never had help from this program. She never received any help, and that she died 3 months after my father. And I know that my mom died today of natural causes due to the fact that she was an untreated Al-Anon. And I know that today. And I understand more about my disease today than I ever had. We went on in life. We moved a lot because Dad used the money to drink. Mom wrote bad checks, and we had no money. And the lights would be turned off, or the phone would be turned off, or you know, we'd have to move to another place to have, because the rent wasn't paid. So we moved a lot. We moved around a lot. But I always knew that my mom loved me. I always knew that. I think that it's important today for me to share my story because I'm an Al-Anon and with my mom. My mom was very, very sick. She was very sick emotionally. She tried to keep everything going, and she did as I did in later years. She tried to keep the peace. She tried to keep things going. She tried to make everything okay for Betty and I. She worked very hard. My mom was a paralegal, and Mama worked very, very hard for us, and I'm very grateful for that today. Mom wrote a lot of bad checks, and had to go downtown to the courts a lot, and she'd take me in my little Catholic uniform, and I would sit in the front row so the judge wouldn't lock her up for writing bad checks. And I'll never forget that. One day, they did lock her up, and they took me to juvenile for my daddy to come get me. And after that period of time, I remember Mom, we had to take Mom away somewhere, and it was very frightening for me. We had to take her to a place because she couldn't function anymore. And I can remember leaving her, and I was very, very frightened because Mom was my only stable parent that I knew. And it scared me because I was scared to be left with Daddy because he was gone all the time. She stayed in that place for a while, Mom did, and she came back out, and I was so glad that she was home. And about 3 years later, I walked home one afternoon from school. I got home before my sister, and I found my mom hanging by a pair of pantyhose. She was trying to kill herself when I walked in. And she was very, very sad, and thank God she didn't die then. I'm very grateful today. And I have to share that part about my mom because, to me, the disease that I suffer from is equally as important as the disease an alcoholic suffers from. And in my opinion today, the only difference between myself and an alcoholic is the bottle. I have the same character defects. I have a lot of the same personalities. The only thing that separates me from you is the bottle. And I also know that I have a compulsive behavior, and my mind is compulsive. Father, one of the priests in Birmingham explained to me, with an alcoholic, they have the tunnel vision. And once the thoughts start setting up, they go to the bottle. And that they can't see anything on either side of them. They can just see where they need to go and what's setting up inside. And I understand that compulsion today. I understand how it feels. For me, my fix were people. And to me, the alcoholic is the bottle. And in my opinion, for me, the only difference between me and an alcoholic is the bottle. And Mom was very sick, and we went on in life, and I went to Catholic high schools, and I was real, real popular in school. I went to an all-girls school, and I worked in the projects in Louisville, Kentucky, in order to make enough money to pay for my tuition because Mom and Dad couldn't afford to send me to private schools, and I really wanted to go. And I was on the hockey team, and I was the captain of the hockey team, and I was on student council, and I was on the Red Cross, and I was just real, real active in school. And I was one of the outstanding teenagers of America by the President of the United States. I wanted to show that to my kids one day. I can't find it in all the moves I've had. You know, I've lost stuff everywhere. So anyway, we were real stable through high school. Dad kept drinking. Mom was getting better. She must have sought some type of help. I know that she visited a lot with the priest in our parish, and I think he was very supportive to Mom at the time. And Mom was getting better some, but Dad was still drinking, and we didn't see Daddy a whole lot. I graduated from high school. I was a good kid in school. See, I was always good. I got approval by being in the choir and being in things and trying to be the good kid. And I was the good kid. My sister was the opposite. We couldn't get her out of bed to go to school. And I always got mad. I said, Mom, why does she get to stay home and I have to go? Well, you know how she is. I said, yes, ma'am, I guess so, but I'm gone. You know. And I graduated. I fell in love when I was in high school. I thought it was love. I fell in love with my first husband. And we were married in October after graduating in May. And it's real strange how you find out things later on when things are over, but he had a lot of alcoholism in his family. And I can remember he was not a very affectionate person, and I can always remember even as a little girl, a big void in me that said, if somebody loved me, I'd be okay. Just if somebody loved me enough, I would be okay. And I sought and sought that path all through my life, that if I was good enough, then somebody would love me and they wouldn't leave, because my biggest fear was of abandonment and rejection. And I still have problems with that some today. It's not as great as it was, and I've done a lot of work in that area through this program, Anyway, we married, and we had Michelle, my daughter, who is today 21. And he was gone a lot. He liked to play basketball with the boys and drink beer. And so it was kind of Shelley and I doing a lot of things together. I went to work at that time part-time in a bank, and I became a bank teller. And I thought, that's good. I can help people. And I'm still in that business today. I'll tell you about that later. And I worked hard, and Michelle and I started growing up together, because what do you know much at 19 about being a parent? I just figured I'd grow up with all my kids, and we grow up together. So it was real neat. I dressed her up, and I kept her clean, and I changed her clothes 4 or 5 times a day, and give her baths, and take her walking, and we had fun together. Michelle and I had fun together, but yet I was still watching myself trying to be good enough for Michelle's dad. Just maybe if I kept the house clean enough, and maybe if I looked pretty enough, and if I did all these things good enough, he'd love me. Well, the harder I try, the further away he'd go. And we were married about 2.5 years, and he found someone else while we were married, and we got a divorce. I moved from that point to Nashville, Tennessee. That's where my mom and dad had moved. Now, my dad had a few geographical cures, too. So Mom and Dad were in Nashville at the time, so Michelle and I, Mom and Dad come get Michelle and I out of Louisville, and we moved down to Nashville with Mom and Dad. Well, during that period of time, my daddy got a DUI in Nashville, and it was very expensive, and he had to go to jail, and Mom had no money, and I worked for a bank, and my credit was okay, so I went and got a loan to get my daddy out of jail. So I went down to the jail to the bondsman, and we got my daddy out of jail, and we brought him home, and he says, Anne Marie, I'll never do this again. I said, Daddy, please be careful. So we went on and on, and sure, Daddy kept drinking, and Mama kept trying to keep the family together, and we moved around. We lived with Mom and Dad, Michelle and I, for a while, and we moved around, and Daddy always wanted to buy a bar. That was his dream. Every alcoholic needs a bar. Their own personal bar. So Daddy bought a bar. And Mama worked in the bar with Daddy. And to make extra money at nights, I worked in the bar serving beer in order to make enough money for Michelle and I. Of course, you got to remember, at this time in my life, everybody that drank was okay with me, because that's all I ever saw and that's all I ever knew. You know, so I thought, oh, well, this is okay. And I met this man in the bar. And he seemed nice, and he just drank beer just like Daddy. So I thought, well, he isn't as bad as Daddy. So this should be all right now. This should be all right. Because I just knew if I was good enough and I tried hard enough, they'd love me, they'd stay, and we were going to have this normal, in quotes, family, where everybody loved each other and everybody went to church on Sunday. We have a whole bunch of kids. Oh, I ended up with a bunch of kids. And everything was going to be wonderful. You know, you had the station wagon and do all those things. And it's fun. So anyway, I knew him, probably dated him about 3 months, and he was nice to me, and he seemed like he liked me, and I thought, and Daddy's drinking was getting worse, and I wanted to get away from that and to have a better life in that. So, I figured, this is the one. He has a nice, and his mother goes to church, and he's got to be a good guy. So we got married. You know how the alcoholic says that they try to control their drinking and they change their types of drink? Well, I guess with me, looking for what I needed with me, I just found different kind of alcoholics to love. So anyway, we married. Well, I never saw the side of this man when I married him, but when he got real drunk and mixed alcohol and beer, he became very physically violent. Well, I had never received as a child physical violence, and I wasn't sure. And I mean, he was a big guy, and he would come in and be drunk, and you'd be sitting on the couch, and he'd pick it up and throw you over on the couch and on the floor, and everything went everywhere. And I thought, ooh, we're not going to have this nice little happy family like this. And this I don't think this is it. But I stayed in that marriage for 2.5 years, and the violence got extremely bad. I'd go to work with bruises and beat up. And I'd tell people I fell down the steps. And at that point, I had no help from this program. And I didn't know anything better. The night I left there, it was I lived in Greenbrier, Tennessee, for those of those who know about Tennessee. And it was very, very cold, and I stood outside in my nightgown. He had a shotgun to my head with my daughter in my arms. And just by the grace of God, we got away, and he didn't shoot me and kill me, and I never went back again. But I felt like a failure. I felt like a big failure, because if I had tried harder or if I'd been better, then he wouldn't have drank, and he wouldn't have acted that way. So there must have been something wrong with me. Because as a child, I felt inside that there was something wrong with me. At that point in time, I stayed single for a while, and Mom and Dad had known this other guy through their bar, and he was seemed real nice. He went to church, in fact, where I went to church, Our Lady of the Lakes out in Hendersonville. And I'd seen him in and out the bar, and he'd gotten a divorce recently, so we started seeing each other and dating some, and I thought, he doesn't drink as much as the other ones drink, and he seems real nice. And he didn't beat me up, and just maybe, this is the right one. And we dated for about a year, and he always seemed nice to me, and he was kind. We'd have a few words here and there, but basically we got along. But one more time, I was still looking for something with outside of me to fix what was wrong with inside of me, because I hadn't learned yet that the only thing that can fix inside of me is me and God, and that God uses you all to help heal me up also. So we married. He had two sons. I had one daughter. I knew nothing about boys. And we got married, and here's the deal. They come to live with us right away, and immediately I'm a mother of three children living in a little place in Kentucky. We had a three-bedroom, one-bath, little house that had no heat inside except for a fireplace. You know, these stoves, and you blow it back out, and it was a real serious, and I was not a country woman. I was raised in the city. My nearest neighbor was 1 mile, and we had no telephone. And I surely couldn't call my mama, and I didn't like that very much at all. But I knew this was the setting. We had a church in town, and he just drank beer, you know. And I didn't seem drunk too often when I dated him. And he wanted more children. And you know now, if we get the right marriage and we have more kids and we have the right house and we have all these things, then we're going to be happy and everything's going to be okay. Well, we stayed together 11 years, and during that 11 years, it was very trying, very painful. A year and a half after we were married, I had my son Joey, who's now 14 today. And then 2 years after that, I had my son Stephen, who's going to be playing baseball here in about an hour and a half. I'm usually with him on Saturdays. And I know today that Kenneth was in the last stages of his alcoholism when we married, the very progressive part to where, with all the blackouts, and Kenneth was also very violent too. I just never saw that in that year. We lived in that little place in Kentucky, and he drank. And now we lived in a community called Cadiz, Kentucky. And I don't know if any of y'all know about Cadiz, but it's outside of Hopkinsville, going toward Paducah. It is an all-Baptist community. Catholics are like this. You stay away from Catholics. And he decided to go in business for himself. And if you weren't from Cadiz, forget it. It wasn't a good deal. The only thing that saved him is that they hired me at the bank. Now, I've been working for a bank all through these times. I've been a banker all these times, and thank God I've had decent jobs to help with me and the kids. And we had kids, and I had four boys and one girl. And I thought, all right, now this is the nice, big, happy family, and this is going to be great. So anyway, we started raising the kids in Kentucky, and Kenneth's drinking got worse. He began at that point to become violent with me and with the children. And I can remember praying and praying and praying for God, please, please, to heal this marriage and to help this family, please. Because more than anything in the world, I wanted a happy family and people that love one another. That was the desire of my heart. And we moved. The economy got bad in Kentucky. Kenneth's drinking got worse. Farming got bad in Kentucky, and it was just a nightmare. And so Kenneth says, Annie, we're going to move to Texas. And I thought, oh, my God. I'm going to be real far away from my mom and dad. I may never see them again or anything, you know. And this is how much money we had. Stephen at that time, which is my baby, was 3 months old. And we had a station wagon. Now, see, I got one thing I wanted. We had a station wagon with five kids. Now, it was beginning to come true. We had one van when we moved to Houston. He had a van. We had a station wagon. I had my rocking chair tied on the top of my station wagon so I could rock my babies. We had their clothes. We had two beds, one chest of drawers. And we moved to Houston, Texas with bald tires and took those five children. And I prayed and prayed and cried and prayed. And I said, God, you just have to take care of us. And we moved in. Anybody's been to Houston, we moved in a black community in downtown Houston because that's all we could afford for a time. The priest had given us a house to live in for a couple of months till we had enough money. And I had to take pennies, what we had brought from Kentucky, and roll them up and buy food for the children. And I didn't eat for a while when we first moved there, but maybe a meal, some bread and that a day. But he kept drinking. And we got to Houston, and I love Houston. We got there, and then we moved out to another community. We got out of downtown. I got a job in a bank. He got a real good job, and we moved out into a suburb called the North Shore area in Houston. And we moved into a four-bedroom townhouse with the five kids, and we had decent jobs, and things were starting to look up a little bit. But if anybody's been drinking in Texas or been to Texas, there is a open beer joint on every corner and a gas station. So there was a lot of availability, you know, to drink, and I thought, oh, mercy, this is going to change because there's no more places to go. And at that time, Kenneth's drinking was worse, and I got worse. I progressed very badly in my disease. We moved again out of the duplex until we rented a house. And at that point, he was gone most of the time. It was the five kids, myself, and I had 32 employees at work to be a supervisor over. I had two babies and three teenagers at one time in the house. And if you're an Al-Anon, you ever thought about drinking, you probably would during that period of your life. It was real different there. I got real sick. I got to the point with my disease that the boys, my little boys would come up to me and say, Mama, can we go out to play? And I couldn't even make a decision whether they could go outside to play or not. I was too confused. I was all tunneled in on him, that just if I could control him, I tease people, I say my disease today is one of control and fix. If I can control it and I can fix it and it'll turn out the way I want it to be, then everything will be okay. But that's not true. At that point, I was real confused. I was having some severe violence at home with the children, and we even had a plan for everybody to get out. But I knew that I couldn't leave. Who's going to leave with five kids and try to make a new life? I mean, that was just too scary for me. And I didn't know a better way than either. And in February the 10th, 1981, I got to a point where I couldn't function very well at work. My bosses knew what was going on at home. And the president of the bank called me in, and he said, Annie, he said, honey, there's a program called Al-Anon. Now, keep in mind, the president of our bank was one of the most rip-roaring practicing alcoholics in our community. But he had found Al-Anon for me. He says, now, you take my car, and you take off, and we're going to hide your phone calls, and you go to this meeting, and you come back, and we're going to support you in getting better. So on February 10th, 81, I walked into a Friday meeting of Al-Anon in Houston, Texas, bawling and squalling and not knowing where to go and what to do anymore, because I had tried everything that I knew how to try to make it better at home so we could have that happy family and so I would have a good marriage and he would love me and everything would be okay. I got there. There was a precious, precious lady named Minnie, and I'll never forget Minnie all my life. And I just cried, and I sat there and cried, and I kept apologizing because I was crying. And she says, honey, it's okay to cry. And I know today so much about when the big book says that alcoholism is a family disease and that it affects everyone in the family. And in my family situation, that was very true. And it also says sometimes, and I believe it says that sometimes that the family becomes as sick, if not sicker, than the alcoholic. And in my situation, I was very, very sick. I was very sick. In my recovery of these 10 years, I've had some super bad valleys. And if it had not been for this program and you people loving me, I would not be alive here today and the grace of God that has sustained me one day at a time. I started going to the meetings, and I don't know if any of y'all can relate. A lot of times I hear in the program today, the alcoholic goes first, then the Al-Anon comes in next. Well, in my situation, I went first, but we couldn't let Kenneth know that I was going to Al-Anon. So I say I am an undercover Al-Anon, because the first 2 years of my life, it was undercover. I went to Al-Anon. I would go when he was out of town. I would go during the day and take the bank cars, and my bosses held my calls, and he never knew where I was. One night he came in, and he had been out all day drinking, and he was in bad shape, and he run up upon my Al-Anon literature. He found it, because I hid my literature, because if he saw my literature, I'd be in big trouble. I didn't need any more physical abuse. I didn't need the kids abused. I didn't need anything, so I hid it. During those 2 years, I had a sponsor. I knew a few ladies that I could call, and I stayed very close with these people. I did not attend a lot of meetings because I was too petrified and frightened to go and tell him I was going. The day he found out about me going to Al-Anon, that was a real deal, because where I went to my meetings was two blocks at a church from where we lived, and that did it. He said to me, you are ruining my reputation in our community. You have ruined me in this community. And I said, Kenneth, I said, he says, I do not have a problem. I said, do you not think the neighbors notice when you drive up and park your car sideways in the driveway? Or when they hear you in the yard screaming and hollering, do you not think they know? I don't have a problem. Well, being the good Al-Anon that I was, once he found out, he told me, so if I ever catch you in one of those meetings again, if I ever catch you, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to leave you. Well, see, my biggest fear was abandonment and rejection, and I didn't want him to go. Who wants five kids by yourself? Today, I'd probably keep me and the kids, but that's because I've been around a few days. We had fun when he was gone. We did. He'd travel some, and man, we'd have fun. We'd just get out the popcorn, and we'd go to the movies, and we'd mess up the house. He had this thing about the house. Everything had to be perfect, and everything had to be real clean, and if it wasn't, he raised hell, man. I mean, bad. This is big time bad. You know, we go flying across the walls. There we are, up on the road, and then it's everywhere, you know. And he would come in, and this is the deal. I do have a little resentment today still about this. I'm still working. I pray for him still every day. We've been divorced 5 years. Okay, he walks in, and he goes like this to the windowsill. Are you ready? And I'd think, he says, we have dust on the windowsill. I said, I've been working full time, and I got five kids. But I cried. See, I wasn't well enough then. I went and got a rag and cleaned it. I really did. And we'd stay up. He's gone. We stay up at night vacuuming, cleaning, because we knew if he came home, the house wasn't clean. The kids wouldn't get to do nothing, and I was in big trouble. So anyway, being the good Al-Anon, I figured I want to share with you my first experience around people in AA. Keep in mind, I was an undercover Al-Anon, only could go at special times at special places in foreign cars, so I wouldn't be caught. So one night, he went out of town on a Saturday night, and my sponsor called and said, we're having a birthday meeting over in Galena Park, an AA birthday. She says, come on, and we're going to go out with a bunch of alcoholics after dinner, and we're going to have dessert. And I mean, my heart was pumping fast because I thought, oh my God, oh my God, I'm in big trouble now. So I went and I sat and I cried because I heard about people getting better and I heard about God, and it gave me some hope, some hope. And to be honest with you today, when I started Al-Anon, it was not for me. It was how I could get him to quit drinking so we could have a happy and healthy family and everything be all right. I didn't go for me. I was unmanageable, but the bottom motive for me going was to figure out how to fix him so we'd be okay and I'd be happy because somebody loved me. Such a nightmare. Anyway, I got some AA literature, and I left it on the table when he'd wake up in the morning so he might read it. I thought, this is going to be the solution. I'm going to get him into the doors of AA. Well, that didn't work too well, you all. It did not work well at all. One night he got drunk and he got all my Al-Anon literature and all the AA literature and all my Bibles, and he put them in a bag and he took them out front and he slapped me down the side wall and he said, if you pray for me again and you bring this literature in, I'm going to kill you. So I kept my literature out, locked up in the trunk of my car because he didn't have a key and I knew he couldn't find my stuff, and I had to go to the trash and get my books back out. I learned a lot. I have had equally as much help from the people in AA as I have in Al-Anon. And I love my fellow brothers and sisters in AA so much today because they've helped save my life. I have a lot of respect for the people in AA as well as in Al-Anon. I kept going to Al-Anon, and during that time when he was drinking so bad and my vision was so tunneled and so hooked to him, and I think the only way I know how to explain it is that it's like I was addicted to them as they were to the bottle for my happiness and my fulfillment. Jay said it's okay if I lose myself sometime. I kept on going to Al-Anon, and at that point I didn't know, but two of my children were drinking and drugging too. My daughter and my son Bobby. And I was so hooked into Kenneth that I couldn't see their problem. I was incapable of seeing it. Kenneth quit drinking for about 8 or 9 months. He did not go into AA. He did later on. And I continued when he quit drinking to go to Al-Anon, and it helped save my life, and I was able to keep going and doing. I got a call. The police brought my son Bobby home one night at midnight. Bobby was all messed up. He smoked marijuana, did some cocaine, and he had been out stealing, pardon me, from our neighbor's cars and selling parts from their cars to support his habit. And at that point, the police told me that I had a choice. I could either get my son some help, or I could, he was going to jail. So I called in. I got Bobby into a program in Houston, Texas. Bobby today is 24. And his little son named Robbie. And Bobby does not drink or drug today. And he's a sergeant in the Army. And he just got back from Saudi Arabia 2 days ago. So I'm very grateful. I have to tell you a little more about my kids. At that point, when Bobby went into the treatment center, it started waking up everybody in the family that we were a troubled family. And the thing was is that the message that we got was, you don't tell anybody outside of this house what's going on inside of this house because we can fix ourselves. But we were too sick to fix ourselves. While Bobby was in the treatment center for his problem, while we were in family, we found out my daughter Michelle had been using too, and she'd been sneaking out at nights. And at 13, she was out at nights on the streets in Houston, Texas. And she was stealing cars. And she was using drugs, and it almost broke my heart. So we put her in a treatment center. Michelle is 21 today. I know that she doesn't drug any longer. I think that she has a drink occasionally, and that's being honest. On a whole, she functions very well, and she's keeping Joey and Steven so I can be here today. I have a lot of respect for my children today because I've learned that my children have also become my teachers, and that they know so much about life, and they know so much about me that I never knew. Bobby got help, everybody. We had 4 people in the house in the program, me and Al-Anon and 3 alcoholics, and I'm going. And everybody was running my inventory, and they got a little pity pot, and they set it up on the wall, and they said, Mom's pity pot. And I told them to take the pity pot, and they better get it down quick. It was my program, and I worked my steps, and I run it the way possible. At that point, I was working on my fourth step when everybody was sobering up in the house. And I had a real resentment. I had a real resentment because I had to work this fourth step. Because my attitude was, my insanity of my disease said, I wasn't the one that drank. So I couldn't be the one that had the problem. I still paid the bills and took care of the children and saw all the wash was done and went to the grocery store. And you know, I couldn't see my insane behavior that well. But my insanity was very, very severe. Very severe. Because, see, I always kept thinking if I kept doing and doing and doing and being that everything would be all right. Everybody was in the program and doing their thing, and our families was getting better, and everybody in the program. Kenneth was in AA, and the kids were in AA, and I was in Al-Anon, and we had a lot of people over to the house, and we had a lot of great fellowship. I always feel like when I have an opportunity to entertain people in the program, I'm having an opportunity to entertain miracles and angels, because all of us are miracles, see, and I know that, and that's a big blessing for me. 5 years ago, Kenneth comes in from work, and he had some other problems other than alcoholism, and there was some very severe abuse to some of my children, even in his sobriety, and he had a problem. And he came in, and he told me, he said, we're going to move to Birmingham, Alabama. I'm getting a promotion. You're going to, at that time, I was an assistant vice president in a bank and running a branch, and I had a really good job. Several years back, prior to that, my mom and dad had died 3 months apart. My dad never sobered up. He died drunk. And my mom died 3 months later. But by the grace of God in this program, in this fellowship, I was able to, and the steps, I love the steps, I was able to deal with my childhood and things with my parents. And I went to a retreat in Houston, Texas after Mom and Daddy died, because I spent a lot of time with Mom and Dad, and I loved them so much. And I always prayed that my daddy would quit drinking. I went to a retreat center, and I had a real special lady work with me, and I wrote letters to my mom and dad, amends letters, because I had a problem. In my early 20s, I felt like my parents owed me because I was raised in an alcoholic home. And I probably portrayed that attitude to my mom and dad for several years. And the bottom line was, they didn't owe me anything. They did the best that they could do. And I miss them today. And I made my amends to my mom and dad, what I was responsible for. This program has taught me that what I'm responsible for is me. And it's my responsibility today for my relationship with God. And through the steps, and it showed me that my responsibility is how I act toward others. And thank God for the inventory steps that allow me to look at myself daily, and also gives me an opportunity to make amends when I so need to. And I love the 11th step when I've had an opportunity through meditation through the years to improve my relationship with God. I had God problems after I moved to Birmingham. My marriage got a lot worse. There was some more severe abuse. Everybody in my house quit going to the program. And at that point, I walked back into the doors of Al-Anon, probably for the first time in my life, for me. And at that point, I've been in the program 5.5 years, I believe. But it was miserable, and it was unhappy. And I was miserable. And at that point, I didn't care if they ever got better, but I knew that I had to work on me. And I walked in just for me that time. And I had a lot of love from the people in the Huffman group. And if it had not been for the AAs and the Al-Anon and Huffman, I don't know what I would have ever done. I have a dynamite sponsor in Birmingham. Her name is Carol. And for she and Percy, I will forever be grateful. I was my marriage broke up. I had to deal with the state of Alabama with some abuse problems. I didn't even know if I'd get to keep my children, and the abuse was not for me. And I didn't know that my children wouldn't be taken away from me. I was in a new city. I was away from all my friends in AA and Al-Anon in Texas. I was lonely and I was scared. But I know today why God brought me to Alabama, because he had to deal with me in certain ways. And if I'd had some other people around me, then I'd been able to lean on them more and not be able to lean on God as much. The first year that I was single after the divorce, I was a branch manager, which I still am, a branch manager for a credit union in Birmingham. I was very, 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 very sad. I was not hardly able to function. I had to pray greatly. If it had not been for the steps and the love for the people in this program, I don't know what I'd done. And I didn't know that many people at this time. But I knew what you all had told me all along. If you'll keep coming back, if you'll keep working the steps, and you keep showing up, you'll get better. And a lot of times, all I could do was get on my tennis shoes and show up. And I cried in these past 5 years, probably many, many tears of sorrow. But since October of last year, I've had an opportunity to cry a lot of tears of gratitude. A lot of tears of gratitude. I'm very grateful today. Joey, Stephen, and Michelle and I lived in a house in Birmingham. My two stepsons were older, which I raised from the time they were 9 and 11. Bobby was in the Army. Mike was out driving a truck. And we started making a life. I had a Doberman Pinscher. We were all so scared being by ourselves. I had a waterbed, right? For the first 6 months, myself, Michelle, Joey, Stephen, and the Doberman, we all slept in the same waterbed every night. Now, you talk about your life being unmanageable, because every time somebody rode one way, the other ones would wake up and roll the other. I didn't get much sleep those first 6 months of being single by myself again. But I knew that something was wrong with me. I knew that I was very sick and I needed help, and I knew I needed to keep showing up. At that point, I had to seek some professional help also. We went on, my daughter had never really had the opportunity to be a teenager. And once Kenneth left, that opportunity began. Joey and Stephen were scared of their dad because of the violence. And there started to be some freedom. I knew if I kept coming back to this program, I tried to practice these steps and the principles, I get there, because I learned a lot about powerlessness. You know, today I know what I have control over, and that's me and my relationship with God. And I've learned a lot in these past 5 years, and I have a new relationship with God today that I didn't have 5 years ago, because I looked at God then as somebody that was punishing me. And see, I dealt with God the same way I dealt with y'all, in that if I was good enough and I performed well and I behaved and acted well, then God would do good things for me. Otherwise, I didn't deserve it. I didn't know at that point a God that loves me and that says that I deserve to have all the promises that this program has to offer. I thought they were for all of you all, but not for me, because I wasn't even good enough for God. And I had to go through some real, real humbling times learning. And it was almost like one person told me in the program, Annie, you need to throw away the God you got and get you a new one. And I said, pardon me? I can't throw God out. This is the only thing that sustained me all life. You want me to throw him out? They said, we don't mean throw out God. You need to learn about a loving God that loves you as you are and accepts you. Just like the people in this program do, they love you and accept you just as you are. And I've been on a spiritual journey in the past 5 years, and I can say today that I know that God loves me just as I am. I think in my disease that I compromised myself many, many times in the name of love. And in the name of love, the harder it hurt, the more I loved. And the more I loved, the pain got greater. And I was in some real impossible situations. I'm real grateful today to be alive. I continue going to meetings. The people in the program help me at Christmas with my children. I tell you something real precious. My kids always wanted Christmas tree lights outside. They did all their life, but we couldn't have them. The first Christmas that it was just the kids and I, Michelle said, Mama, I'm going to take the boys. We're going to the store. Can I write a check for $50? Because she was on my chain. Yeah, she was a senior. No, she was a junior. I said, sure, honey, go ahead. You know, whatever. You know, here's a dog running around the house. And they came back with $50 for outside Christmas lights. They stayed up to 1 in the morning. And, honey, we had extension cords hooked together everywhere. I mean, there's lights everywhere, right? And I get ready to put my hot curlers in my hair the next morning. And I'm up saying, has anybody seen the pins to my hot curlers? And they said, Stephen, the baby says, yes, ma'am. I put them in the ground to hold down our Christmas tree lights because they're so pretty. My children had a lot of damage. And I got to share with you at the end about where we all are today. And it's so exciting for me. But last October, I'd been in this program, and my sponsor, my one in Houston and one in Birmingham, who I love and respect so much, we stayed very, very close, and we have, and they stay very close with me, and they loved me, and they have the love. My sponsors have that love that we get from being in this program, and they give to others, and they're dynamite people. And I called my sponsor last September. I'd been in this program 9.5 years, and I've been crying. I started crying again, and I was very, very sad. I was very sad. I couldn't function on my job. I could not get my kids to ball practice. I could do nothing. And I called my sponsor. I said, please come to my house. I said, something has to be done because I'm very sick. I said, been in this program 9.5 years and something's missing. And she came down and she hugged me. And she says, Annie, I've never seen anybody try to work to get better than you have in my whole life in this program. She says, honey, I think you need some other help. I drove 90 miles an hour from Birmingham, Alabama to Roanoke, Alabama to get some help for me. I walked out of my house from all the people that I loved, and I knew that I could not function anymore. And I went to a hospital in Roanoke, Alabama. And when I got there, the lady that ran the unit that I went to, I cried when I walked in, and I shook like a drug addict. And I said, I've worked all the steps. I've been to hundreds of meetings. I've shared with others, and I've prayed, and I don't know what else to do, and I feel like a failure. And she said to me, honey, you're suffering from severe depression, and it doesn't matter how many 4 steps you took, and it doesn't matter how hard, you have to have some professional help. And I took a risk because I called my bosses, and I said, you can fire me, but I'm gone. I have no other choice. I left my children and I kissed them, and they weren't sure I'd ever come back again. And I left someone else that was very special to me that I loved, and I said, I can't even stand you in the same room with me. And I had to leave. I was there for 3 weeks, and they've helped me with my depression, and I also have something called panic. And I always thought I was a terrible person. I was in the program, I had so much fear, and I kept working my 4 steps, and I thought, why didn't the fear go away? It does for everybody else. What's wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? I knew I had to have help for that also. And thank God today, since last October, I don't live in a dark hellhole any longer. And I'm very, very grateful to God for that. And I was a little scared about sharing that with y'all today, and I had to check in with some people in Birmingham, you know. But it tells us in this program that this is just a part of our recovery. And sometimes we need other help, and I had to go get other help. And I'm so grateful that when I got in my car, I had to surrender to everything I knew and I loved, and even to the steps in this program, because I felt like nothing worked for me anymore. And today, because I got some help, I understand the steps better, and I can see. Wayne and I were walking around last night, and I said, honey, look at this tree. Look at its arms. I said, I've never seen anything like that in my life. He said, you just were missing it. You couldn't see. And that's probably true. For many, many, many years, I couldn't see, and I'm just beginning to see. And it's because of this program, and it's because of a great God that loves me, and people like you all, and my special new friend in my life that I love very much, that's bringing me back around. I think it's been very humbling for me, and I'm going to close, very humbling for me since last October, and I want to share with you some things about my kids and where we are today. We are not a perfect family. We still have some pain. My daughter, Michelle, I got her some professional help her junior and senior year, and she's out there functioning today. Her road that she was heading on was a very sad path. I'm real grateful today she's not a prostitute and an addict down on the streets. And for that, that's a miracle. She works a job. And for my birthday, she had me a surprise birthday party. I turned 40. And she told me she would never trade me for any other mom in the whole world. And there's been a lot of healing there with Michelle and I, because there's been a lot of pain there too. Bobby, that's doing well in Germany. As far as I know, I want to call him when I get back. My oldest stepson, Michael, has a lot of problems out there. He's out on the streets real hard today. Joey. When I got my divorce, Joey made the A honor roll, and I was real sick. I couldn't give my kids much attention. And he got an award for the whole year for making the A honor roll when it was terrible in our home. And he stood in our front yard that first year, and he tore it in pieces, and he threw it up in the air. Today, Joey plays third in Jefferson County in wrestling. He's a starting running back on his football team in junior high. He made the AP honor roll most of the time this year. And it's so great. Stephen, my littlest one, was taped in his desk, and I wasn't able much to be there for him when he was in third grade and he failed. And Steve, you always wanted to play baseball. So we went to the park to play baseball. And the first year, Stevie was too scared to ever swing a bat. He'd just stand there and it'd go by. And I'd say, God, please let the child swing the bat. And he had some real bad problems with self-esteem, terrible problems, and a lot of anger. Steven was very angry about the divorce and all. And the first game this year, Stevie got the game ball and he had three hits right in a row. And man, that's a miracle. But I kept telling the kids inside, you know, you can be the best that you can be. If you just ask God to help you, you know, we can all get better. And we're learning to communicate, me and the kids, and talk about how we feel and what we think. And when we're scared, and when I was in the hospital, the kids came to see me and they sat across from me. And my daughter looked at me and she says, Mom, you can sponsor people in the program. You can help people all around. You always have. But why can't you help yourself? And that was real hard for me. And I know today that I try to help myself because I want to have what this program offers. And this program has offered me the opportunity that if I will work these steps, and I will try to trust God, and if I will take an inventory and I will seek God, that I have an opportunity to be happy and I can be joyous and I can be free. I have a real special person in my life who's with me now, and I'm very grateful for him also. I can't say enough words about him, but that he's my friend and he supports me to be the best that I can be. And he doesn't know much about this program. He hasn't been around it. This is real new for him. But he wants me the best to be the best I can be, and I want him to be the best that he can be. I'm very grateful. We both turned 40 in the past 40 days. We turned 40 together. And I'm trying to learn to have a relationship, and all this stuff is humbling, man, to be vulnerable, to share and not worry that it's going to come back and smack you in the face, you know, and to try to care. And I'm real grateful for this opportunity to learn to have a relationship that we can share and care and be friends and love each other too. Last year, my branch at our credit union, you can receive what they call the Chairman of the Board's Award. I have three dynamite employees who are probably praying for me right now that have hung with me more than you'll ever know. And we went to the annual meeting for the credit union. Afterwards, I have the employees meetings and nobody knows what awards they're getting. Last year, my branch and another branch got the chairman's award. I was very grateful. But this year, when they gave the awards, my branch was the only one to get an award, the chairman of the board's award. And that's a miracle. And I know today, more than anything in the world, that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. And that he understood when I was mad at him, and he understood when I didn't trust him. He understood my fear and my pain. But today, I'm learning to share with my God some joy, and it's the most wonderful thing in the whole wide world. Thank you for inviting me to speak. I love you all, and God bless you.